Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Adam Clayton Powell, for the first time, was defeated. Charles Rangel won in a very close election. Within a few years, Adam Clayton Powell would contract cancer and die.
If we must die, let us not die like hogs, penned in some inglorious spot. What use is an extra year or two to the man who kills the time that God has given him?
Much of the story of Adam Clayton Powell is on display here in this anteroom of the Abyssinia Baptist Church. But there are many parts of the Adam Powell story that you cannot see hanging up on the walls, mainly the ironies in his life. Isn't it ironic that Adam Powell was such a loud voice that few people would listen to? Perhaps if his loud voice had been heeded on the question of police corruption, there may not have been a Knapp Commission. If his loud voice about government corruption had been heeded, there may not have been a Watergate. If his loud voice against hypocrisy on Capitol Hill had been heeded, perhaps Wayne Hayes and Tom Dodd and Earl Butz and Carl Albert and countless others might have not have been caught in such embarrassing situations. Adam Clayton Powell represents still another chapter in a long story of black militant fighters against oppression and injustice here in America. He wasn't perfect. He had his faults, but don't we all? The point is, he was a fighter. If he did play He worked harder than he played. Most of all, he was a fighter.
As far as I know here, you're in trouble. Where it says about 30% are unemployed. That's why I'm working hard to get this surplus food here. Some of you say to me, well, I'm not like you. I'm not a congressman. I haven't got education. I haven't got work. But you're a human being. And you know what you've got? You've got in your hand the power to use your vote and to use even those few cents you get from welfare to spend them only where you want to spend them. A young slave boy stood one day before the greatest ruler of his day. And God said to Moses, what's in your hand? And Moses said, Lord, only I've got a stick, that's all. He said, well, let me use what's in your hand. And God used that slave boy with a stick in his hand to divide the Red Seas, march through a wilderness, bring water out of rocks, manna from heaven, and bring his people to freedom land. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? George Washington Carver, who was so frail that he was traded for a broken-down horse as a slave boy. And George Washington Carver, sitting in the science laboratory at Tuskegee, told me, he said, Dr. Powell, he said, I just go out on the field each morning at 5 o'clock, and I let God guide me. And I bring back these little things and work them over my laboratory. And that man did more to revolutionize the agricultural science of peanuts and of cotton and sweet potato than any other human being in the field of agricultural science. What's in your hand? Just let God use you, that's all. What's in your hand? I've got a string in my hand, that's all, and I'm flying a kite. And way up in the heavens, lightning strikes it. And I, Benjamin Franklin, discover for the first time the possibilities of electricity with a string in my hand. What's in your hand? Little hunchback sitting in a Roman jail. I haven't got anything in my hand but an old quill pen. But God says, write what I tell you to write. And Paul wrote, I have run my race with patience. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. Henceforth, as laid up in the slingshot, and the enemies of my people are great and big and more numerous than we are. Well, little David, go down to the brook and pick out a few stones and come on back and close your eyes if you want to and pull back that slingshot and let it go. And David killed the biggest enemy, the leader of the giants, against his people, and his people became free, just letting God guide a stone in his hand. And a few years passed, and David is a king. And God says, what's in your hand? He said, I've got a harp in my hand. He said, well, David, play on your harp. And he played, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Leadeth me beside still waters. Yea, though I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. What's in your hand? What's in your hand? Man hanging on a cross? I've got two nails in my hand. Father! I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If thou withdraw thyself from me, whither shall I go? And that man, with two nails in his hand, spit history in hair, B.C. and A.D. And what's in your hand tonight, people of Cambridge? You've got God in your hand, and he'll let you win, because he's on your side and one with God. Always in the majority, so walk with him and talk with him and work with him and speak together and fight together. And with God's hand in your hand, the victory will be accomplished here sooner than you dreamed, sooner than you hoped, sooner than you prayed for, sooner than you imagined. Good night and God bless you.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, This man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
How are you maximizing the gift that God put on the inside of you?
I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
If he gave you the vision, he'll provide the provision.
I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of eight. And that day, I took that five and turned it into 60. I took that 60, put the five back that I started with, and turned that into 600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit too. So when they say, ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
Now before we hop into today's show, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Now let's jump into the video.
So Mignon, I didn't know this about your story. And I've known you for years now. And if I am correct, you were a teen mom. When did you have your first?
I had my first baby in 1993. And I had just graduated from high school.
Okay.
But I graduated from high school a year early. So I had gone to college early. Nobody prepared me for what the party was going to be like on an HBCU campus.
Oh, man.
So second semester, I'm bringing home a baby bumblebee.
Are you serious? What HBCU did you go to?
I went to Xavier University.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the shocking thing to me, and this is why I love your story, because every time we do something like this, right, something powerful comes from it, and I learn something brand new from you. And you had five kids before 25?
Yeah, I had five kids at 21.
21?
Yeah, by the time I was 21, I had five children. Three of them were a wedding present.
Okay.
And then two of them I had given birth to, and I had my sixth one at 27.
27?
Yeah.
And didn't drop out of college?
No, it just took me a little bit longer. I even took my children to school with me.
What?
Sometimes they were in class. My baby Dylan, who now runs the business, would sit in the back of my Bible class. He would never be silent. He would never sit still. But when I needed him to go to class, it's like something happened to him, and he would just color until the class was over. Man. Like, God, shut that baby's mouth so I could graduate.
Man, and today, we won't tell the people how old you are. You still look like you're about 30 years old, you know what I'm saying? But today you're running a multi-million-dollar cupcake business. And I don't even think it's a cupcake business. I think that you're running a multi-million-dollar ministry because when people experience you and your cupcakes and your team, your staff, it's just a different experience, right? And I want to talk about that because some people are experiencing you for the first time here on my show.
Mm-hmm.
And when people experience you, what do they get? I know what I get. Yeah. I get a deeper side of you. But when people experience you for the first time, what will they get? I'm curious.
I'm hoping that they get joy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's my mission in life. I want to leave everyone experiencing Mignon Francois with joy.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is such a big value for joy in heaven because in the Bible it says those who sow in tears will reap in joy. And when you think about sowing and planting, it takes time for a harvest to grow. And I just think that when that harvest is joy coming out of the things you've gone through, it just lets you know that everything that's happening to you is happening for you.
Yeah.
It's something that you can plant, and something is going to grow out of it. And I believe that's what my whole experience has been about.
Yeah. And so you wrote a book.
I wrote a book.
And this book, I was emotional when I read it. This is not the book. I want it to be fresh. I actually read a PDF version that your team sent over. And it's called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. And inside of this book, you talk a lot about choosing life. And really, if you just follow you, you're always promoting choose life.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean exactly, choose life?
That's such a good question. I was being awakened at 3:17 every morning, and it was like clockwork. Like, you ever saw the movie Groundhog's Day? I would turn over and see the clock. It would say 3:17. I would just awaken.
Wow.
And so I got up, I would check the house, check the stove, make sure my children were breathing.
Yeah.
And one particular day I couldn't go back to sleep. And so I turned on the TV. And to me, the best television is either during Black History Month on TBS or fundraising time.
Right, right, right.
And there was a guy on TV. He's passed away now. His name was Wayne Dyer. He said, the morning breeze has something to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Do not go back to sleep. And that sounded crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know nothing about no morning breeze talking to me. All I'm listening for is Jesus now.
Yeah.
And so he said it a couple times. But the third time he said it was, God is trying to speak to you, and this is the only time you'll listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so while you think that you're getting up to check the stove and the door and stuff, you're actually getting up to spend time with God, because this is the only time you're silent enough to listen.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, well, he can stay on my TV. And I listened more. He then began to explain that it would take me a week now to get out of the bed, now that I knew that that's what I was getting up for.
Mm.
He was right. But he said, just put your feet on the floor. Eventually, you'll stand up. And that's exactly what happened. I found myself back in the same place where I had started. And underneath the table, I saw my Bible there. Because I was sitting there, okay, God, you want to talk? I don't know what you want to say. Please don't talk. Because if I hear your voice right now, I'm just going to lose it. So don't say nothing. But I do want to hear, from you.
Yeah.
And so I saw my Bible and I decided to open it. And I just let it fall wherever it opened. It opened up to chapter 3 of a particular book. I believe it was Ephesians 3. And I started at verse 17. And I got my first message from God. And he let me know that he loved me. And he was about to show me that he had plans for me and that I needed to follow them. And so every morning I would go to chapter 3, verse 17, read through until the end of the chapter or until it didn't make any more sense.
Yeah.
And then I go on to the next book. I read the whole Bible like that at 3:17 every morning for weeks. When God stopped awakening me on the last day, I fell into Deuteronomy.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was chapter 30. And also in Joshua. And I think that was Joshua 1. It was like the first chapter of Joshua. And God said, I'm sitting before you, life and death, blessings and curses. Choose life. And what it said to me was, I've given you a lot of businesses, Mignon. I have had so many business ideas, and you start them, and you stop them, and you don't follow through. And God said to me, I'm not giving you nothing else.
According to recent stats, only about half of African Americans have some form of estate planning put into place. This includes important documents like your wills, your trust, and your power of attorneys. Additionally, only about 60% of all people have life insurance coverage. But why is it so important for not just Black people, but all of us to have these things put into place? You see, life insurance can provide financial protection for your loved ones in the event of your unexpected death. It can help cover funeral and burial expenses, pay off debts, and even your mortgages. But here's what I really want you to consider. It can provide income for your loved ones to build wealth with. You see, estate planning, on the other hand, can help ensure that your assets are distributed according to your wishes after your death, and that your loved ones are taken care of. If you truly love, and I mean this, if you truly, truly love your loved ones, don't leave their financial security at chance. I want you to get life insurance today. You can get a free quote with my friends over at Ethos by visiting anthonyoneal.com/life insurance or by clicking the link in today's show notes. Protect your family's future and give yourself peace of mind. Don't be in heaven and you're full of joy and your family is here on earth struggling and stressed. Get life insurance today with my friends over at Ethos. Hey, now let's get back to today's show. I know it's a good one.
So you better take what we've been talking about these last several weeks. It was everything that I would need to start the cupcake collection, which is the business he gave me at 3:17 in the morning.
Wow.
I would get up, get to my Bible, bring a pen, and I had a journal book. And the journal book was about a 5x7 journal book, something I could take with me everywhere I go, because a thought only lasts for scientifically 30 seconds unless you ink it in time.
Right.
So you have to write it down in order to not forget it. Because, you know, a lot of times you say to yourself, I'm going to remember that when I get home.
Right.
And you just don't.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And it's, for me, it's not the same to put it in my phone.
Okay.
So I keep a pen with me and a journal from that day forward. And when God stopped awakening me, I had filled that entire journal book, even to the edges. When you close it,
right.
I had even written on the edges of the book. I keep that in a safe now. When I being awakened, it was all of the instructions for what the cupcake collection was going to be. The crazy thing about that was I didn't know how to bake, not even out of a box.
Mm.
But I was listening to this guy on the radio. His name was Dave Ramsey.
That's my guy.
And he was telling people that they could get out of debt by having a bake sale or a garage sale.
Yeah.
And we had sold everything we had to get to Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, God, well, I guess it's going to be a bake sale. And I had these two daughters who were great in the kitchen. And I thought, well, we're going to do your little, you know, you guys are going to bake. What do you think about that? My oldest daughter said, okay. And my younger one was following her sister. Said,
let's do it.
And shortly after we got started, my oldest daughter said, I'm not really interested in your little bakery idea. I'm going back to New Orleans where we're from.
Right.
And so without her, my youngest daughter wasn't interested anymore. So here I am. God has given me all of this stuff to make this business. And he says to me, choose life, because if you don't do this, or if you turn from it to the left or to the right, anything that I've taught you to do, I'm going to take everything from you and you'll die. But if you are careful to follow everything that I said, I will make you prosperous and successful at everything you do. And so I decided that at that point, I understood that God had basically told me he was tired of giving me things. And the thing that I've learned and I want people to know is that I was 31 at the time when this was happening. And I think a lot of times people think it's too late for them. You know, my life hadn't started. We were drowning in debt and brokenness. We were oftentimes living in that house without electricity.
Mm.
And I was 31 years old. Like, you expect your life has started by now. There is a return on the investment that is your life that God is expecting from you.
Mm.
Just like you put your money in the bank.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want a return on your investment.
Yeah.
God wants a return on the investment that he's placed in you, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're made in his image, so we want things that he wants.
Yeah.
And so God was tired of giving me ideas that I didn't follow through with.
Mm.
And so what he said to me was, choose life. And I understood that choosing life meant not taking another idea and not following it through. And I think a lot of times we think that we're afraid to fail.
Mm.
But really what it was for me was I was afraid to be successful.
Wait, what?
I was afraid to be successful because getting up and being successful means I always have to show up. I don't get to sleep in. That means when I don't feel like it, I still got to come to the table, right?
Good.
When I don't feel like it, I still got to produce the product. When I don't feel like it, if I don't feel good, I still got to show up. When I'm going through a divorce and losing everything I have, I still got to show up. And I got to be smiling about it. And I think that's the thing that people really are afraid of. They're not afraid to fail. You're afraid to succeed.
Because of the responsibilities that comes with success.
Yeah.
That is so good. Because you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been afraid to fail. I've been afraid to succeed because I'm scared of what comes with success.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're successful, then you have more people who can see all your flaws.
Yeah.
And then now you have people who expect you to show up. And now there's certain things you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what helped you get over the fear of success, though?
I was afraid of God.
Ooh.
Like, literally, I knew that I had heard him because I was waking up every day at 3:17. And when I opened my Bible, it just falls into this book, chapter 3. I go down to verse 17 thinking there's something in that 3:17 thing.
Right, right.
And I get my first message. I was afraid that I was going to die.
Yeah.
And I think when God knocks on the door of your heart,
yeah,
and he says, I want you to let me in.
Yeah.
You better be answering.
Yeah.
And I think that was my thing. I knew that if God ordered the meal, he was responsible for the bill. And I felt like he was going to pay for it.
I like that. If God orders the meal,
mm-hmm.
he going to pay the bill.
Yeah.
You know, as a single man, that kind of, you know, kind of stands out to me a little bit. Someone's like, hey, if I invite you on a date,
yeah,
I'm responsible for the bill.
Yeah. And as a single woman,
wow.
I expect him
cool.
to pick up the bill.
Come on, mama. That's real, though.
So God being my father, right,
yeah.
God being the man in my life, I was expecting that if he was inviting me into this relationship to do this thing with him, in collaboration with him, he was going to take care of me.
Because if he don't take care of you, it's not just you looking bad. It's our God looking bad. And he ain't trying to look
He's
bad.
He's not doing that.
Ooh, that's good right there. Now, I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. If God says it, do it, because he going to take care of the bill.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he has shown me that he would take care of me better than any man ever has.
Ouch.
My earthly father's first responsibility was to show me my heavenly father.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
My father was a hardworking man who always was at work. He provided for his children.
Yeah.
I don't think there was anything that we ever really wanted.
Yeah.
In the earth that we couldn't have.
Wow.
Like, me coming to this place of understanding took me all the way around the mulberry bush to learn that about my father. But at the end, when he died, I saw his work is being done.
Wow.
And what I was left with was a heavenly father that he represented, who I could go to and say, Daddy, I need you to do this for
yeah.
me. And he does it.
Yeah.
And that's the way my father was.
You know, you guys, Mignon has written a book that I really want you all to get. She's been on my show several times, and I'm pretty sure y'all have seen her go viral several times, the things that she said on my show, from the table to our Black History panel that has over a million views. And she has a book called Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. It is on pre-order right now if you're watching this in the month of April, but it comes out in the month of May, and I want to encourage you to get this book. I've had the opportunity to read through it, and I fully endorse it. I don't know if it's going to make it on the actual book, but you know what? She is doing some amazing things, some of the best cupcakes in the entire world. I'm just going to be honest with y'all. It is. I call Mignon my spiritual mama. My earthly mothers, my practical birth mother, and my other mother of every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, like the last, I want to say, 5 years
mm-hmm.
now,
mm-hmm.
They expect her to ship them cupcakes to North Carolina and to California, even to the point to where I forgot last year, and her team called me the day before Christmas Eve. It was the 23rd. Hey, we didn't get your order in. I was like, shoot. And my mom was like, hey, did we order cupcakes? I was like, Mom, I forgot. Christmas Eve cupcakes arrive to Cali and to North Carolina. That's just how good her cupcakes are. And if her cupcakes are that good, it's because of the story and the journey of what she has gone through. And I think the spirit of just on them cupcakes, the spirit of it. And it's like you went from $5 to 5 million plus now in sales. I don't know where you are now in sales.
Mm-hmm.
That was years ago when you were saying 5 million.
Yeah, that was 5 million. Cupcakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That wasn't dollars.
Ooh.
That was 5 million.
Cupcakes. You took $5.
Yeah.
And it turned into 5 million cupcakes.
Yeah.
And I like your tagline, finding success without a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people right now are relating to that. Like, how do I find success?
Yeah.
You know, like, how do I do something of substance? How do I... how do I know to do what God has given me if I don't know how to? You didn't know how to do cupcakes.
I didn't know how to bake.
Now you have, I mean, it's not my opinion, y'all. I'm talking about publications. I'm talking about people who actually rate cupcakes said she is number one.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the recipe.
Yeah.
You didn't know how to do it.
No.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because, like, now you have several, you have a couple of stores, several people working for you. I mean, and you have freedom. We're going to talk about that, because you said something to me a while ago about freedom. That just shifted my whole mindset. But how did you go from no recipe to having a strategy and recipe now? Yo, real quick, you guys, are you looking to change your career here in the year of 2023? If so, look no further than Bethel School of Technology, the only Christian online tech boot camp in the world. According to a recent report, black people make up just about 4% of the U.S. technology workforce. But you see, at Bethel Tech, who I partner with for this year, they believe that all people, including us black people, should have access to the lucrative and fulfilling opportunities in the tech industry. Now, with their 9-month program, you'll gain the essential skills you need to start a successful career in technology. And let's not forget the earning potential. You see, according to Indeed, the average salary of a software developer in the U.S. is around $103,000. Say what? You know, you can choose from programs like the cybersecurity and UI/UX design and launch your tech career or even a tech business ignited with passion and purpose. So listen, we're going to skip the debt and we're going to invest into yourself for just 9 months that can change the next 9 years of your life. All you got to do is join Bethel Tech today to achieve your career aspirations. Visit AnthonyO'Neill.com/Bethel or click the link in today's show notes today so you can register and start a new journey of your life. Now, you know what? Let's get back to the show. So this is a good one today. Let's keep it a buck.
Yeah, what I want people to know is that every stupid thing you've ever had to do is taking you from where you are to where you want to be. And so sometimes we think, I'm not supposed to be right here in my life. I should be further.
Yeah.
I should have accomplished something else. And you see all the people around you making it, and you're the only one that hasn't found success yet. And that was my life.
Mm.
And I had gone to Xavier University. I was on scholarship when I got pregnant. That kind of put me in a position where I had to drop out of Xavier and go do something that was going to be quicker.
Okay.
So I decided to go pick up nursing somewhere else.
Okay.
That didn't work out. And then I ended up meeting my husband.
Okay. Was the key word.
Yeah.
I want y'all to know y'all saying, husband. Was husband. That's what I'm saying. I got you.
I ended up meeting him, and then we get married and move to another city. So I just, life picked up.
Okay.
And so, you know, when I was doing that, looking for my place, I found what I was supposed to do. I finally put down on a piece of paper what it was that I wanted to study, and it was always journalism. I had this writing fever on the inside of me. So I had gone from being a pre-med student to being a nursing student.
Okay.
I couldn't apply the science to the human body. I was flunking out of my classes. Then I end up dropping out of college to pick it up later to follow my passion, which was writing. And then I also got a degree. So I ended up graduating with a dual degree in mass media and psychology because of all the pre-work that I had done as a pre-med student. And then I picked up a passion for photography. Little did I know that God was setting me up for a business. He was going to show me 17 years from then.
Ooh.
And I became my first marketing person.
Okay.
I took all the photography that you used to see on our website.
Yeah.
I took those pictures.
Are you serious?
I was the one who laid out all of the pamphlets and things. I knew how to promote myself because I had gone to school for that. But it was in the kitchen where I was trying to figure out how to do what Dave Ramsey was telling people to do, have a bake sale.
Right.
I called my grandmother on the phone, and I say, Grandma, how do you make cake? And she goes, baby, I don't have a recipe. You know, pinch this much together, you know, get this ingredient. She was talking about ingredients that are not even in the stores anymore, you know, because she's older school, right? And so I realized something as I was trying to follow my grandmother's recipe. This is unbalanced. This is an unbalanced chemical equation. Had I been able to balance chemical equations at Xavier, I would be a doctor right now. I couldn't make it work. But it was mixing up the things and putting in the rising ingredients that I realized I could manipulate cake and make it do whatever I wanted it to do. And so I always let people know I'm really not a baker. I'm a scientist.
Ooh.
I'm a food scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
And so was actually doing chemical reactions in the kitchen 17 years later, trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents.
Yeah.
That all of the things that I had ever done came together as a recipe.
Yeah.
So now I make all of the recipes that are on our lineup.
Yeah.
We've been voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
Yeah.
We've been voted as the best cake in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I stand as the only business that has that, the only bakery that has that ranking in more than one state, because that's the only states where my bakery exists. We also rank as one of the top 10 in the nation. Our food truck was one of the first ones introduced in Nashville.
Yeah.
And still carries a top, ranking.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. We call her Joy.
You're next to a restaurant that I used to go to, and I'll never forget. When I first met you, was at Dave Ramsey's office.
Mm-hmm.
And you blessed us when I was on staff there. And I'll never forget when you was on the stage, I said, I felt something in my spirit. You're supposed to be connected to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, how do I do this? And I'll never forget, I sent the message to you, and I was like, hey, I don't know what it is, but I want to come by the shop and get your story.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've always called you one of my spiritual mothers.
Yeah.
Because every time I get near you, in the beginning of our show, you said you want people to experience joy.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned so much from you spiritually. I experience the joy. You always have a smile on your face. You're always honest with me. You've told me some hard things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. You know what I'm saying? When I was making the transition, you asked me some hard questions,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, this is why. But I got to tell you, that recipe, I ain't never liked vegan stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you made me try that vegan cupcake,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell it was vegan.
Yeah. And that's my goal. That's my goal. I want to be the best at what my wheelhouse is. I don't want to do other things. I don't need to be the best at cookies. I make some amazing cookies, but I'm not trying to sell them. I don't need to be the best at donuts. I want to find the best donut shop and eat them.
Right?
But I want to be the best at cake because that's my lane.
No, you're the best.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
No, I'm serious. You're the best. I mean, I order them.
Yeah.
I haven't even tried no other cupcake in any other city. I'm like, if I want cupcakes, I'm just going to call my people.
Yeah.
Drew, hey. I need some cupcakes. All right, bro.
She's got you. We're beginning to even anticipate. Like you said, I remember going into the bakery, and it was Christmas time, and they were scrambling around. I said, does Anthony have an order? She was like, oh, let me call him right now. You know, I said, just put the order together, because you know he is required to send those cupcakes.
I am coming to get them. I'm telling you that right now. You said to me a few years ago, you said one of the best ways of freedom is through ownership and entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still feel that way?
Yeah. I definitely know that I can own my time. I can own my decisions.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the things that I'm also teaching the people who are on my team
mm-hmm.
is about ownership. And you say, why would you say that when they work for you?
Come on, talk.
You know, for me, it's like they are in the business of their own labor.
Yes.
And so I want them to know that even Adam and Eve were required to work and to do something.
Yes.
And they can take their labor, and when they see it from that angle, they steward over it differently. And I just believe that entrepreneurship is the way to freedom. And when I look back on my history
mm-hmm.
and my ancestry and the women who came before me, whose names and faces you will never see, names you will never know.
Yeah.
You will experience them because you will know my name.
Ooh.
and you will not forget it, because I'm going to offer you the best that I have available. And the thing about it is there might be somebody watching who's a baker and who says, she ain't better than me, you know. That's not, I'm not trying to be in competition with anybody.
Come on.
I believe that collaboration is the new competition.
Yeah.
And all I'm trying to do is go into those places where we've been historically enslaved and redeem the time.
Come on.
Because my grandmother couldn't have free enterprise. My father was born on a plantation in 1947. My grandmothers couldn't have free enterprise. And so I just want to be able to be the best at living in this sugar business. Being a descendant of enslaved people from a sugar plantation. And I think that is, that's nothing but God.
You know, here's my problem. Why is it that if we strive to be the best, it means we strive to compete?
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us should strive to be the best.
Yeah.
You should strive to be the best cupcake person, which I believe, in my opinion, you are. But then you watching, you may be in the cupcake business. Strive to be the best.
Yeah.
You know, and then, hey, how do you partner together? How do we come out here and really impact people and inspire people? It doesn't have to take away from us striving to be the best. I want to be one of the best podcasters and YouTubers when it comes to bringing people financial freedom. But my brothers, Earn Your Leisure, they're killing the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, how do we partner together?
Yeah.
How do we help more people?
Mm-hmm.
But we're both striving to be the best.
Yeah, you look outside of the box and look for ways that you shine, that you can bring some light to the other person, right? And something my five-year-old said, he's 21 now, but, you know, when he was 5 years old, I had been working every day like it was a job for 2 years to open up this business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I think people forget. You see me now,
mm-hmm.
and you think, oh, she showed up on the scene. I was working 2 years like it was a job before my store ever even opened. This is 17 years of my life that ended me up on this table, even though it's somebody's first, you know, experience with me.
Yeah.
My five-year-old said to me, I was driving down the street, and I had been working every day. There were no cupcake shops in Nashville. And we were driving down the street, and there's a big sign, give us a swirl. This cupcake place was coming soon.
Yeah.
I slammed on my brakes and started to cry in the middle of Division Street, which is a busy, you know, intersection in Nashville.
It is.
And my five-year-old taps me on the shoulder from the back seat and says, Mommy, there's room. Just because she's first doesn't mean she's going to be the best. And so I wipe my tears, turn the corner, and stop the car again. And I'm just looking at the sign, and I'm crying. He said, Mommy, there's room for cupcakes. I never forgot what that five-year-old said. He's such a good businessman now as an adult. All of my children are. But what he let me know was, if you were the only cupcake shop, Mama, you can't serve all the people in this one city.
So can't.
So let her do her thing on this side of the city, and you go do your thing on that side of the city, and you both can win.
Yeah.
And that's what I found, that I learned things from watching them come first. It was a blessing that I wasn't first out of the gate, because there were mistakes that, in my opinion, that were being made that I would have never wanted to present my business as. And my son told me there was room. So as other ones began to pop up on every corner, it seemed like, I would welcome them to the neighborhood and to the business. I hope you do well, and cheer them on. I wore a crown for several years as the sugar queen. And when, on the last time the competition was run, I gave up the crown. Like, I didn't want to compete because I wanted somebody else to shine.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, you know, that allowed me to exit the competition on my terms. And from then on, I began to sort of have this light, be this lighthouse in the neighborhood to show other people what good business looks like.
Yeah.
And then to let them know what they could do if only they believe.
You know, one of the things I'm really excited about this book is you're very big. You love all people, but mm-hmm. you're very big with the and really, I'll say this correctly. I know how to say it. You have a heart for the black community.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone follows you, you know you're very big on the black community, but you love everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you partner with a publishing company that yeah. is very big in the black community as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
R.H. Boyd, and I know their president very, very well, LaDonna Boyd. What's up, LaDonna? And their story is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LaDonna is the first female five generations in to a all-black publishing company.
Yeah.
And then you have a heart to where you want to help the black community because your ancestors couldn't do certain things because they were black.
Yeah.
So you partner with a black publishing company to write this book. And it's going to help all people, but I really do believe this book is for that black individual.
Yeah, I would say that my book doesn't have any color in it as far as skin color goes,
yeah.
but I think that this is our season.
Yes.
I think this is the year of black women being able to come to the table and be successful and make a mark on the world. And the reason why I chose to do this with R.H. Boyd, that there were offers on the table
yeah.
from just about every major publishing company.
Yeah.
Three of the largest ones wanted to talk to me about this book and had brought me to the publishing roundtable.
Wow.
But the reason why I did it with her is because we're two women who are the descendants of enslaved people.
Yeah.
Her great-grandfather, I think fourth great-grandfather, opened this printing press when it was illegal for us to read.
Mm. Mm.
So that kind of grit and sacrifice is what I wanted to publish my story of being also the descendant of enslaved people.
Yeah.
And I just thought that this was the place and the only place that I could do at least the first one with, because there's more coming out of me. This is just coming out of the block.
What are we going to get inside of this book? Like, what is something that's like, Archie, guys, this, when you read this, this is what you're walking away with.
Yeah. I promised God that if he would make me successful, I would tell anybody who would listen about what they could do if they believe.
Mm.
And I can't get to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for 3:17 in their morning,
mm.
wherever they are, to be able to collide with God so that they can see my situation and know that they are not alone. That if they're sitting in a house with no electricity trying to figure out how are you supposed to get your children to school today, because
yeah.
that was me,
yeah.
that they can have someone else who's been there too and let them know that they are not alone.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that they know, even if they've been a stay-at-home mom, which is what I was, and your husband decides that he wants to walk away,
mm.
that God will be a better man to you
mm.
than any man could have ever been. I want them to know that people who in the comments say, ain't no way she started this business with $5 and turned it into all that, that miracles are still happening
mm.
every single day in 2023. God is able
yes.
to do exceedingly and abundantly above all you can ask or think. And for the naysayers who say that she was being irresponsible having all those children and she couldn't take care of them, I didn't choose this path for myself. This was not what I decided to do and how I decided to be it, but God pulled me through something so that I could help other people out.
Mm.
I believe that we go through things so we can pull other people through them. It wasn't the path that I decided to take, but it was the path or the lesson that was given to me.
Yeah.
And I just think about Jesus kneeling down on the ground when all those men came to accuse this woman. And he begins to write on the ground and says, whichever one of you who doesn't have any sins, you go ahead and cast the first stone to kill her.
Yeah.
And then when she looks around, they've all left because they know they've got skeletons in their closet. And Jesus says, I don't see anybody here that's trying to talk about you. And so that's the thing that I want people to know, that no matter what you don't have, I was sitting in the back of my house with no electricity, trying to do the Dave Ramsey baby steps plan. When my neighbor knocked on the door and made me an offer, I had $5 left in this plan, and I hadn't even fed my family of eight. This was all we were going to have to eat for a week. This $5 was all we were going to have to eat for a week when she asked me to make cupcakes, because they were going crazy in my Germantown, Nashville neighborhood about these cupcakes that I was making in this former crack house that I lived in. And they were calling it lemon crack in my neighborhood. And so she wanted to pass that out to, you know, all of her friends. And when she knocked on the door, I was like, okay, God, why would you bring this to me when I don't have any money? All I got is $5. My cars had been repossessed, so I don't even have really a way to get to the store. God said, in that moment, I feed birds, and they don't work, and they don't toil. How much more will I provide for you who looks like me when the lilies of the field and all of their splendor are here today and gone tomorrow, and even Solomon, who was the richest man that ever lived, wasn't clothed like one of these. Just do what I ask you to do, and I will provide. And that day, I took that five and turned it into 60. I took that 60, put the five back that I started with, and turned that into 600 by the end of the week. And that is the same money that I've been flipping for 17 years. I did it with no debt. I did it with no knowledge of the business. I did it with no experience. And for all the people who got something to say about it, I did it with no credit, too. So when they say, ain't no way, there was more to the story than that.
Yeah.
And I just believe that when God tells you to do something, he's also responsible to say, now do this, now do that. And I followed, and I was obedient. That's what I am. I'm obedient.
Link for the book is in the show description. That's all I'm going to say. You need to get the book, you know, because some of y'all watching right now, you were a team mom. And some of you haven't healed from it because you're listening to what everyone else is saying about you. And, oh, girl, you should have did this. You should have did that. You know, Mignon, you remind me of my good friend Sarah Jake. She was a team mom. And
love her.
And look how powerful she is today. Look how powerful you are. Look at what you all have accomplished. And I think what we have to do is start studying people and get around the right people who have made similar mistakes, and we learn from them how to keep on moving. And she won't say it, but she has an amazing team, an amazing staff who love her, who respect her, and she's doing some amazing things. But she started from scratch. Some will say she started from scratch with a mistake. Heck, I remember at one point in time that I thought I was a father. Some people say, Anthony, well, that wasn't wise of you. It probably wasn't. But I can't allow our past. We cannot allow our past to determine where we're going in our future. God determines that. And I want to encourage you all to get the book, Made from Scratch, Finding Success Without a Recipe. The link will be in today's show notes. I promise you I'll get it. But now we're going to have some fun with my mama before she leaves. She doesn't even know I was going to ask for this stuff right here. But mama, because you said husband.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
You said husband. You know we ain't gonna put your age.
Okay.
You
know yeah.
How is it dating as a older, I'm gonna say older, as a wiser, successful woman? I'm curious.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder, or sometimes I ask myself, why am I in this position that I'm in?
Mm-hmm.
I had done all the things I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
In the book, people are going to learn things about my story that I've never said publicly.
Okay.
Things my children should be broken for that they watched happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when my husband left, God said, give him everything he asked for. I will give it back to you.
Wait. So you ain't get 50% of it?
I gave him everything he asked for. The only thing I got to do was buy his portion of the house where the bakery is back from him.
Wow.
And everything else that he took, he lost.
Wow.
And God said, I was driving down the street one day, and God said, I still am going to give you the replacement on that husband, too. Mm. I haven't forgotten what I told you, because I know I was made to be a wife.
Right.
But I don't want to, I want to steward well over this single season I'm in.
Absolutely.
I went from my mother's house to my husband's house to answering to my children. So I went to answer to my parents, to answer to my husband, to answer to my children. So I think that God is just giving me a time to answer to myself,
ooh,
to get up and decide that I want to go and fly to Chicago and eat dinner and be back home, you know, by breakfast in the morning with myself, not by myself.
Oh, that's so good. Because every time I call you somewhere, I'm like, yeah, she enjoying this single life right here. Because I'll be, how about, like, look, mama, where you at?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm in Nashville. I'm going to get some cupcakes. Oh, I'm not there. Just go by the shop. Well, where are you? Then one time I asked you, what's his name? She's like, well, I'm talking to someone. I mean, I'm like, oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, lock her down. Lock her down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I believe it, though. Mm-hmm. I just, whoever marries you, wow.
I think I keep hearing things like, and my mother says it like this, I carry myself like a married woman so people don't know that I'm single.
Yeah.
I think that my husband's going to know that.
That your husband's going to know that you're single.
Yeah, I think my husband's going to know that I'm his wife and that I've been carrying myself for him.
That's good right there.
Yeah.
So that's God protecting you from, like, the weirdo.
Yeah. I have been through so many things in my life. I would say that God always sends me women to be on my team and to work with me for all the things that I've been through.
Yeah.
I would say that there has never been a woman on my team that has been through something that I didn't experience.
Wow.
I would say to all the beautiful girls who are watching, that feel like nobody sees them.
Yeah.
And to all the people who feel like they've never been pretty enough, that regardless, you don't know the challenge and the journey that those beauty queens have gone on. And people often say, I can't believe that you're single. And I'm like, well, you also can't believe what has happened to me at the hands of men.
Oof. I ain't want to go there on this show because I think I would have been crying. Because when I read that book, you never told me that part of your story. And I was like, wait, what? And even my content writer who I had her read the book as well, she was like, did you know? I was like, no, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even find myself to come and have that conversation with you.
Because
I was like, you went through that? And the reason why it's hard for me to have a conversation because I couldn't tell that you've been through that. Because you don't treat men wrong.
Yeah.
After what you've been through with men,
I should be a bitter
black
woman.
You should be a bitter black woman towards men. And I've never sensed that with you.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you've connected me with a lot of other men and they all love you. And I'm like, wow. And I respectfully say this. There are some ladies who've been cheated on and haven't gone through even a quarter of what you're going through, and they can't stand us men.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, whenever she get married, you're going to be a
woman. Yeah. Oh, whoever he is, he's going to be treated like a king.
Oh, my God.
He's not going to know what happened to
him. Like, oh, my gosh.
But I hope that I get the same thing,
you know,
in return. I believe God for that. And I'm excited to be able just to have this conversation for other people who are watching, who are looking at me and saying, but you're successful and you have this and you have that. Like,
but
you know,
been through it.
Yeah, I've been through it. And a lot of people want to have the experiences that I have, but you don't want to go through what I've been through to get here.
Man, listen here. I don't wish what you've been through on any woman. And literally when I read that part of the book, I just prayed for you.
Yeah.
And I prayed saying, God, thank God for you.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for him being in your life. Because
mm-hmm.
if it wasn't for God, we wouldn't be at this table yeah. having a conversation.
If it wasn't for God.
And I just think that's the part that I'm like, wow, God. You, like, he saved your life not just for you and your kids, but for people like myself.
Yes, I believe that. And I believe that that's why God told me to choose life.
Yeah.
Because I needed to live for the person who didn't think they could go on anymore. Mm. I needed to live for the people who are in the valley of decision of saying, this is way too much.
Yeah.
And I want them to know that somebody has
yeah.
it worse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Than you.
Yeah.
And you need to live so that they can too.
Yeah, yeah.
They need to see you living
yeah.
so that they can also live. And that's what I'm here doing. I'm living to show other young people that it doesn't matter if you're 31. I was 33 when this business started. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until I was 33 that I saw myself as beautiful for the very first time.
What?
I talk about that in the book as well, that God in my name had said to the world that he wanted them to know that he thought I was beautiful.
Mm.
It's what my name means. But I lived my whole life thinking I was ugly because of the way I had been beaten down, you know, by the circumstances. I know the day that I first found out I was ugly. It was in the first or second grade on the playground in Aurora, Colorado, where we were living. And it was during a game of tag. And so you got to get the book to hear the rest of the
yeah,
story.
Yeah,
but
we're going to get the book. We're going to get the book. So yeah. Listen, y'all, we're already over time. But what we're going to do is we're going to put the link to this book in today's show notes. If you're going to get it in the month of April, it's on pre-sale. So go get it. Go ahead and get your copy. And then I promise you it will bless you. It's going to bless you. It's going to challenge you in a good way spiritually. I believe this is going to elevate you and help you elevate yourself to the point where you need to be at for success. And it's so funny how we have so many ladies, especially like black ladies, come on here and just drop so much gold and wisdom. And so I just want to say thank you. Thank you, Mama. I call her Mama, y'all. I don't have a lot of people, especially ladies in my life, who I allow just to say things to me. And she'll literally text me in the middle of the night and be like, son, and just dump it on me spiritually. And then she don't even know it. I'll be thinking about that for like a whole week.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read over it. I'll study over it. And one of them I gave to my mom,
mm-hmm.
my biological mom, and she said, I love her.
Yeah.
It's the same prayer. It's the same thought. And my mamas, they don't play about who speaks into their son.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just like, Mion? Oh,
yeah.
We ain't even questioning.
I was so excited when you took her on a shopping spree and you surprised
yes.
her. Like, I felt like I was on that with her. I was literally screaming.
My mama loved
you know,
her.
At the phone. I was just so excited.
She
about
thought we
that.
Were going to coach.
Yeah, yeah.
CJ was with me when we did.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that's my mom. Like, yeah. her response, like, Louis? Louis Vuitton? I was like, Mom, get anything out of here. Because my mom has been through, respectfully saying this, through hell because
mm-hmm.
of some things that me and my brother put her through.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the least I could have done is give something of that special. And I plan to do more for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I had to have you on the show. Because I want my community, my family, my tribe, you all, to get her book. If you love me, I promise you, you're going to love her more. You're going to learn more about her, and I promise you, you'll be blessed by the story. So get the book, and you're going to learn a lot, you know, and especially if some of y'all ladies are feeling like I'm not attractive, especially some ladies are feeling like, hey, I've made some mistakes. I've done some things I should not have done. I promise you, you're going to learn some things from my mama here, and you're going to see where she has come from and how super successful she is, and it's going to bless you. So get the book. We'll drop it in today's show notes. We love you all. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you on the next show. Peace out.
Yeah. figures I step out the room and then it, the audio runs out. Okay. Today, this is a thing we're developing. $50,000 per month. Basically, how you, whoever you are, you, me, whoever, can develop a $50,000. Because I've said on here a few times, whatever you earn in a year, you need to figure out a way to earn it in a month. So let's say you're earning $50,000 a year, or pick whatever figure you want, but we're going with $50,000. Figure out a way in which you can earn that per month. So on the program notes here on Blog Talk Radio, I've got 6 steps, and to break that down, let's say you work 5 days a week, take the weekends off. So you 20 working days in a month. Because some people do, you know, work 6 days a week, some go at seven, but let's say you did Monday through Friday, took the weekends off. And your target goal, breaking down $50,000 per month, is $2,500 per day. All right. So there's a myriad of ways. I mean, some people earn $2,500 a day selling toilet paper. Some people make $2,500 a day selling cupcakes. Pick whatever it might be. So $2,500 a day times 20 days a month will get you $50,000 in revenue. All right. So I say, and the 6 steps I have here is earn $2,500 a day. You know, market. You can also market via social media. Okay. You can do now one radio program a day. That's our goal. We only do one hour per week right now. What I call applied scriptures. Now, for us, Isaiah 65:21, which says, build a house and live in them. So for us, that's, we'll build something that we can sell for at least $2,500. And there's a lot of things that you can do for that. You know, just pick whatever you want. And, of course, now to get sustainable, because that's what we want to do, get sustainable with a program and advertising that we do pays for itself. We have another scripture that goes along with that, Ecclesiastes 11:2. You should have seven or eight. I'm going with the eight figure minimum. So in other words, instead of, and this is a goal, you're not starting off this way, but the goal is, okay, $2,500 a day. Now, multiply that by eight, so we're talking about $20,000. Now, you're not going to start off that way, but $20,000, once we reach that goal of $20,000, because once again, we're taking, and the Steve Harvey thing, 10 by 10. He used the example of cutting grass or cutting hair, whatever. And then, you know, once you got that 10 going, then you do it another 10 more times. And then after you got that mastered, you do it another 10 times. So that's the common denominator. You know, find a common denominator product and or service, and then your multiplier, you know, 7, 8 times or 10 times, whatever you, you know, want. All right, because once again, you want it to become sustainable where you don't have to do a bake sale. Right now, I might have to do a bake sale. I don't know. Daily live streams. And then the sixth step I have here is sell only to people that you have a relationship and some goodwill with. In other words, social capital with. All right, friends, family, and fans, as Robin don't sell the strange. Most times you can sell the strangers and it's okay. But sometimes there's some people out here that no matter how much they want to offer you, is won't be wise to take their money. So that's why I say, if all possible, sell only the people that, or the best you can, with people that you have some type of relationship or goodwill to. Now, pretty quickly, you know, but we'll go all into that in another point. All right, that's, and when I, once again, $50,000 per month daily habits. All right, and the main, first and foremost, you need to find something. Okay, like for Mignon Francois, she started off with $5, her grandmother's recipe, and she went from $5 to $60 to $600 within that first week. Then I'm sure she hit the 25. I'm sure she was selling. She probably sells now because she's got a location not only in New Orleans, but she's got one in Nashville. So I'm sure she sells more than $50,000 a month in cupcakes between those two locations. All right, so find something. And her cupcake, you have to go on the website, the cupcake collection. But anyway, let's see. Robin, are you there?
I am here. And Dilma's
okay.
On as well.
All right. Good, good, good. Any, well, France, well, she gave some interesting tips. People have used bake sales to come, yard sales to come up with cash. Mary McLeod McCroom with McCroom Cooking College in their early days to keep the doors open. They would have bake sales. They would bake pies, cakes, and sell them like for a quarter of a slice. But that kept the doors of a college open. So
yeah,
but there are many ways you can do it.
I was at one point married to a man named Bethune. At one time, I was Robin Lynn Bethune. Sure was.
Oh. That's a very, I've never met anybody named Bethune with that first or last name. Haven't met anyone. That's a rare.
Yes, I am a Bethune for a short time by marriage. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
So.
They're out of Virginia.
Oh, okay. All right.
The family I moved into. But yes. Family, friends, fans, and family. And then remember that the blessings of the Lord maketh rich and addeth no sorrow. Proverbs 10:22, the blessings of the Lord maketh rich, not money. Okay, so watch this. The money is paper that's printed, right?
Right.
So let's look at it like this. It's a bill, right?
Right.
Whatever denomination it is, it's a bill is something that's submitted to pay for something. So
right.
In actuality, the more money you have, the more that you have to spend, the more bills that you have. Literally. Hold on.
Right.
I gotta go on hold.
Okay, Dom, are you there? Oh, well, hold it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, anything, comments while she's on hold?
Well, I just appreciate you sharing all that you're doing, and you've really impacting the lives of a lot of people, not directly, but now this whole campaign is just going to go beyond anything you ever imagined, because this is God's work. So just, I thank you so much for being you, for the years you put in this whole battle. And so just keep up the good work.
Well, I'm not doing it by myself. Yeah.
I said everybody had something. Like your lady, she discovered it. And like you discovered it, so we have to discover what we have. Everybody has something. Start with self. The first thing you have yourself. And you got to
Yeah, she started with herself, because that, I mean, that's got to be a daunting task that she was, now I'm thinking about 2 Kings 4:1-7. She actually lived that. So she had, man, the lights were out. I don't think they had any running water. And she had those kids to feed, and herself and her husband, off of $5. Sometimes they didn't eat until 10 o'clock at night. But she took the order. She didn't even take a deposit. I imagine she probably, you know, baked at a next-door neighbor's house or something like that. But and $5, I meant she went to the dollar store. I don't know how long ago that was that when she went to the dollar store, because even at the dollar store, inflation has visited the dollar store. So things aren't as cheap as they used to be. But she took that five and she got those cupcakes baked. And talk about what's in her hand. She had in her hand, I guess, the $5 in her grandmother's recipe. And then from the $60, you know, I imagine that gave her the confidence boost that she needed, as well as, you know what? Won't you do that? You know what? Steve Harvey said. She did it, 10 more times? Yeah, she did it, let me get my arithmetic straight here. All right, she made $60 that first go around. Let's say that was on a Monday. So she did it, 10 more times. Five or six more days later, she had made an additional $600. And then I imagine, well, let's go from there. She did it 10 more times. And, well, she put it this way. Long story short, she made enough to pull that mortgage out of foreclosure, because that had to be a few thousand dollars with that alone. But before that, she made enough probably by the end of the second week. Or by the time she made that $600, she had enough to put back into the business and get the lights and water cut back on. But she started off with, because it would have been so easy to tell that real estate agent, you know what, I can't take the order. And in her mind, she's thinking, you know what, the lights are off. So she could have focused on her lack. She could have focused on her lack, but she didn't. She focused in on her abundance, and what she had was the $5, her grandmother's recipe, and then I'm sure there was some social capital in there with, I'm just assuming that she went to one of her neighbors, somebody that she can walk to, you know, use their kitchen.
Hello, I'm back.
Yeah, okay. Robin, I was analyzing how she multiplied that $5. where, because she could have turned down that lady's order because she only had $5 in her pocket. She had no lights on in her house and no water. So she couldn't have baked those cupcakes in her house.
Yeah.
Which means
so,
she had to have some type of social capital to go to one of the neighbors. And then I don't know where she bought the, you know, the ingredients. Now, maybe
you know
she already
she
had.
Or that,
what's
and she, maybe she borrowed the ingredients, but she had faith. Faith.
You brought up a very good point. She could have borrowed the ingredients.
Yeah, she could have, you know, but it was her faith that when they gave her the order, she didn't see that, oh, I only just have $5. That didn't even spring first or foremost in her mind. That was just
right.
One of the things that she had available to her. The first thing was faith. And then that faith led her to believe and to do the activities, develop social capital, build on social capital, knock on a neighbor's door. Hey, look, I've got this going on. I've only got $5, but I need blah, 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 blah. Do you have supplies that I can use? Will you chip in? I mean, you don't. Did they give the full divulgation of how it was multiplied? You understand?
No, they don't. Right.
Everybody helped her and whatever, but it was the faith that activated everything, the multiplication and
also,
everything. The faith.
Also.
Yes, sir.
Also, the fact that she was a woman. That's what women do. To feed their children, they get creative, and they do it. That's what they do.
That's the Proverbs 31 woman.
That's right. That's right. Whatever has to be done, that's right.
So I was saying earlier about money. Money is a look at it. Whatever the domination is, but it's a bill, $1 bill, $10 bill, $50 bill, $100 bill. Well, what is a bill? A bill is something that has to be paid. So
it says on there, it's a debt, it's a note, it says on the print.
Wait. So, in actuality, the more money that you have, the more you have to spend because you have to have bills due to spend that money. Otherwise, no matter how much money you have, if it's just sitting there and you're not spending it, it's not worth, it's not, it has no value. It's inert. It's not doing anything at all. Okay, so a bill is something that's due. So if you've got millions of dollars, you got to have something due to pay that bill. And when you pay bills, you're paying something, so you're really not rich. Money does not make you rich. The blessings of the Lord maketh rich and addeth no sorrow.
I'm processing.
Also, when you read the Bible, you find that the people who are rich were rich not in money, but they were rich in resources. Job had 7,000, he had 5,000, he had 500. These were resources, things that breed, reproduced, and create additional value. It wasn't how much money he had stored up, but they were resources. Abraham had resources. All rich people in the Bible have resources, not deals.
And all of those resources were repertoire, if you will,
of
a social capital. You put
people
in your bank, not money, because people have the resources and the assets and the skill sets. People are the currency, not money.
Yeah, I believe in that.
People.
Yeah, you need to have,
right.
You need to have a people bank.
Proverbs 14:28.
So,
LA, get you right, LA.
Yeah, I got it in my notes here. Yeah, Proverbs. Yeah. Well, hold.
And multitude of people, and all the lack of people either way. What you doing on Saturday, on Friday, on Monday? You're getting people, you're getting hands, as you say. You're getting hands, and no hands work.
Right.
You're going to have.
And hands are very significant. Look at this. God has what? The whole world in his hands. The kingdom of God is what? At hand. So hold out your hand. Just take your hand and stretch your whole arm out in front of you and then look at your hand. Okay? So do you see where that's at, the nearness of that? That's at hand. The kingdom of God is at hand. So guess what? Because God has given us authority and dominion, and because Jesus has delegated power and authority to us on this earth, when you begin to comprehend that, okay, now comes the increase and all of that. And the people, basically, it's the people. So you have to remember the people. You have to develop relationships with people. And it does, yes, it does take a village. So get away from that me, I got to get mine, you got yours, I got mine, you get yours. That's not conducive to your general well-being. Let me just say it like that. Ha!
Mm.
Drop the mic drop.
Amen, Robin. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, Delmar. Thank you.
What definitions of faith do you guys have? Now, one, I've got two. One, the late Fred Price. At the beginning, his whole ministry was based on faith, the topic of faith. But he switched off to other topics later on. But throughout, because he did tithes, he did everything. But I'm paraphrasing, trying to get as close as he used to say. Faith is, what's the example he used to give? The example that he used to give, or one of the examples he used to give is, it's you have a guy that's in a hospital and he's dying of starvation. Now the doctor comes in and tells him that, and this is a distinction between faith and belief. The doctor comes and tells him, look, if you eat this food, you'll live. So that if he eats it, that's faith. If he acts on eating, that's faith. However, somebody asks him, look, do you believe that if you eat this food, you will live? And he says, yes, I believe if I eat this food, I will live. Now, he says he's believing, but he doesn't act on it, which Fred Price would call faith. He says faith is actually eating the food. Now, there's another definition of faith, which, what's this guy? He passed away maybe a couple of years ago. And he has, and I'm reading it because I keep it on my phone. He says, faith, all right, he defines faith as information. He says, faith, let's see, let me read it exactly how he wrote it. You see, faith is information we get from God for us to act on. The information tells us in advance what God will do concerning a given issue. This advanced information, also known as faith, usually tells us what part he expects for us to play according to his upcoming actions. Furthermore, faith is a noun. It is something that we have. But believe is a verb. It is something that we do. So now this advanced knowledge, which is faith, is in the Bible, it's called faith. When we act upon this faith or now advanced information or knowledge, then this he calls this believing. So now he doesn't give any example with this, but I'm just thinking about with Noah's Ark. Noah was given specific instructions in advance of the flood. And he built that ark based on that. So, anyway, different people have different definitions of faith.
You may well add the biblical definition, Hebrews 11. Okay, number one, verse one. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, evidence of things not seen. So it's a mind thing first. It becomes manifest after you take the action.
All right, that's good.
That's what it's
manifest
saying.
After you take the action.
How other way men may say it, that is all based on that one you just read. Say that.
The scriptures,
from God.
The scriptures also says faith without works is dead. So that means if you don't act on the information that God has given you, then it's useless. And faith without works is death. And so it could even lead to your death. So
demise.
You have to be very,
right,
very careful. And when we're talking about death, we're talking about spiritual, not physical. Okay?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
There's a lot of people that are walking dead. They're getting up in their cars and they're going to work and stuff like that, but they don't have a consideration or even a thought about their soul or their salvation. They don't even think it's important at all, you know? So the lost, if you will. But yeah, now you are a good example of faith, okay? So hopes for things not seen. So
yeah, I do a lot of that.
You have hopes for things not seen, and then God gives you information that you can bring those things not seen into fruition that now they're seen. That's the works. Because you
are
acting upon the information.
I think all of us, here's how I look at every human being on the planet, unless you have some type of, you know, mental defect or whatever. But the average person around the globe, I believe no matter what station of life they're in economically, Skid Row or Billionaire's Row, whatever, I believe everybody is given an abundance of ideas that can make them uber rich on the planet. I mean, who hasn't had an abundance of great ideas? Or even just good ideas, or just regular just ideas. Okay.
This is a true statement because your gifts make room for you and place you in front of people before. It places you before people in high places, rulers even.
Right.
Just saying. So, yeah, what you're believing, you're spot on.
Right. And that makes each and every one of us in some capacity, particularly when that idea comes to you individually, it's your architect. Because architects essentially are visionaries. They can see the invisible. They can see that building before it's built. But then they take what they see in their head. Or you can communicate to them. You can go to an architect and give your vision to an architect, and they can see the invisible, and then they can reduce it down, you know, to drawings and specs and numbers and all that type of stuff, and then people can build it in the physical world from there. But everybody is an architect of some type. So where was I going with this, though? Going back to I forgot specifically where I was trying to go with this. But and here's another thing. I heard a pastor say this up in Baltimore once, that God never gave a vision to a committee. So a lot of times if you have that one idea, I mean, it's you got that idea. You were given, you know. Now, of course, you might have to, if you take like Jesus, he had a vision. And we don't know how long it took him to get those 12 disciples. You know, there's no record of how long it took him, you know, it took to get those 12 people. But he had to do some networking to, maybe he met 1,200 people. And out of those 1,200 people, he came up with 12 disciples.
But he didn't pick his mom just about one at a time, Ellie. Some of them were brought to him by others.
Okay.
Read the story of Andrew brought Peter and Nathaniel, and then went on from there because they were telling each other, come check out this guy, just one. And they got there, and he was. So some of them he handpicked, but some of them came through other people.
Right.
Which is happening here. You know, like you called the lady, called in, and she'll just book herself. She'd book herself and somebody else.
Yeah. Booked her.
Yeah,
booked her daughter. Another one booked her daughter. And then it was the last call on Monday was from a lady who has her own ministry. And spoke to her yesterday. Yeah. Yeah, she started out, her and her family used to make meals for the homeless in Jacksonville. So, and by the way, she's going to be a guest on Monday's show. She'll be a guest on Monday. Delmar, go ahead.
Yeah. We talk about that the housing part, this ministry, is an extension of anything else of you've been doing.
Right.
You know, it is feeding people. Now you can take it to another level. Now we're going to house them. So it's working like it should. A building process.
Right.
The lady with the ministry, the homeless ministry, tell her to invite people to call into the show, and also have her invite people to the meet and greet, to call you for a reservation for the meet and greet. There'll be a lot of people that come through her.
Yep.
Right. So, anyway, but all right, but that's all I got for right now, because we've got.
We will recruit disciples. we're not going to get everybody all at once, you know, like Jesus didn't, right? But this
you got to build it.
But this will help somebody like her that has a group of people that she regularly serves, and those are some of our target reach.
Right.
And do not think that because they're homeless that they don't have income. Don't make that mistake and count the homeless out. Do not do that.
Right. Now that the homeless, now that word is a big word because they're a different type of homeless. Let me start off with this. You have the working homeless, meaning they have, many of the working homeless have transportation, reliable transportation. Okay. They have jobs. Some of them have been, and then we're not talking about, you know, stable jobs where they've been on a job for several years, but they happen to just, by choice, are living out in their car or van, by choice. Other, or even, you know, school bus or buses, because some of them get vans and they pimp them out. Fix them up. Pimp out means fix up, for those who don't know nothing. We don't mean nothing illegal. And then you have others that are down on their luck. So, and a lot of those people might need social workers. Now, what the percentage is out there, I don't know. But so there are different distinctions of homeless people that are out there. Now, the ones that when we had Pastor Strand on out from El Cajon, California, the six homeless people that they have in their sleeping cabins, they have to go through social workers.
Yep.
You know, whereas with a person that has their own transportation, who's been holding down a job for decades or a number of years, they probably won't have a social worker. I mean, they have a regular paycheck. They get it. They have bank accounts. They just don't have a house to live in.
Yeah. And because they don't have a social worker, they probably won't get into a lot of services and agencies, because a lot of services and agencies won't accept you without a referral. And so a lot of people go, well, I don't want nobody else in my business. Blah, blah, blah. So they won't go and affiliate themselves, even for a temporary time, so that they could have a better environment. It's called ignorant.
Well, now you got some people that are knocking down good money, but they don't want to pay $800 to $1,000 a month rent, so they live out of their car or van, and they're stacking money every month. You know, you got that niche of homeless people out there, too.
Yes.
And then after a year, maybe a year and a half, 2 years, when they've got maybe, I mean, it, believe it or not, there are homeless people out there that have six-figure bank accounts. They just don't want, they got, like I said, they got the car, they got the, you know, they got the job, they got the income, they got the bank accounts, but they do not want to pay a high rent. They want to make a move where they can take a bundle of money and, you know, buy something significant. And, you know, and for their lifestyle. But, and they want to pay cash. They don't want to borrow any money. So you've got that homeless, I see. That one word is a very diverse market of people out there that are homeless. So but it's a big market. So, in any event, well, both of you have given me some encouragement that I needed and some spiritual instruction. So we got, getting back to the topic of the day. Now, $50,000 per month, and that's a figure that that we're going to need to be on. Now, that basically means breaking that down from the first 20 hours. Okay, now, I'm not going to play the audio again today, but we deconstruct the first thing to learning a new skill, and let's say earning $50,000 in a month is a skill. All right, it's a skill. All right, it's a skill that not everybody has, but it's a skill that you can learn. Just like anything, you can learn a language, you can learn how to cook, you can learn how to buy, well, $50,000 is a skill. So that's the skill we're working on. So I broke it down to daily habits, and if you deconstruct $50,000 into a 20-day working month, so that's Monday through Friday, and that's if we build build and or sell a $2,500 tiny house and or shed. All right.
Uh-huh.
Now, you can build it solo, or you can build it Suzu style. Many hands make light work. So from the radio program, there's enough people from the three shows we've done already where we can form a Suzu for those who want out of each one of those groups. And then, of course, we don't know. There's a whale in there somewhere. Okay. Or some whales. But we don't know because we haven't met them. Right now we're building social capital. The radio show, which is talk show style, which builds social capital. Once they come, that's step one. Then we call them back, that's step two. Then we meet them in person, that's step three. Okay. Then when we work with them on a project, which is we're getting together to build a tiny house, and then we put it, so that whole process, we're building social capital. So, now what I need focusing on, because we got an event Tuesday, and it's going to be at the radio station. And we've got, I don't know what you would call it, Robin. We got, call it opportunity. It's two opportunities that we need to take advantage of before Tuesday night. I think Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of this as positive as possible. Would opportunity be the best word?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have two opportunities that's available for friends, fans, and family. Only available for friends, fans, and family.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you see you two get my thinking straight. Okay. So what I'm gonna do, because it's closing time almost anyway, I'm gonna shut it down from now. Then I'll give you a call afterwards, Robert, and I'm dumb also, and because I want to sound out a couple of things, and then we're going to take those two opportunities, actually three. The gift card is a third opportunity. And we have three opportunities, and then I'm going to sound it out with you so I can get it right, and that'll give me my marching orders. But that's all I got from now, so... any good thing you guys want to add on? Oh, but here's the thing. Okay, this will push us into getting it into the daily habit. Now, here's the thing we got so far. Number one, now I've known Robin for almost 10, it'll be 10 years, December the 24th.
In a couple of months. Yep.
Yep. 10 consecutive years. Okay. And then we've done, so we've got over 2,400 podcasts in the can. All right. Now, Robin's done, and I've done more than that, because I've done some things when Charles Tyler was alive and some other people. And then Robin, she has a bunch of clients that got no soul. But let's just take like with It's My House. It's My House. We've done, and I want people to catch the vision on this. We've done over 2,400 podcasts. Now we want to take it to broadcasts which are monetized. So Imagine if we did 2,400 broadcasts, but imagine if we built a tiny house for each one of those and sold it for $2,500.
Yeah.
That would give us $6 million we could have made.
Sold. I'll take it. Where do I start?
That's
$600.
That's $600,000 a year. So because Robin, you brought up something when I had that slip and fall about a month and a half ago. I've never called. I haven't been on every day. That's typically when I've traveled. Okay, but I've never had a sick day in 10 years.
Yeah.
Or if I felt under the weather, nobody knew about it.
Yeah.
Now I might cut a podcast short because I got a Benadryl in me.
That little theme song will come on. I'll be like, well, dang, I just got everything off. I'll get everything. It takes me about 5-10 minutes to turn on signal everywhere. And I got the signal turned on everywhere really good. Then here's that theme song. I'm like, well, damn.
Right. So,
and
then Robin just had a bike incident, but Robin showed up the next day. So we don't miss. We don't miss.
Yeah.
So now we're going into, okay, and I'm so glad when you said it, Robin, if we did it, because I was thinking that before you said it. But when you said it, gave me the comment, like I said, we show up for broadcasts and podcasts.
Yeah.
We show up. So now we want to add the money part onto it, all right, and include. So I'm going to talk to Robin after this, and so she can help me, get what I need to say, because we're going to present three opportunities for friends, fans, and family. Okay. Mm-hmm. To help us, because we both have a vested interest in.
Yes. And you can become parts of friends, fans, and family if you want to be. You can, should I give out the number for them to call in, and then they can make reservations to come to the meeting?
Yeah, may as well. It won't hurt. It won't hurt.
No. Wait. They can call the same number, though, and get on the friends, fans, and family list. We can do that too. Okay?
Yeah.
So, after starting Monday, we'll wait until after we have our consensus meeting today. But beginning Monday, we'll start announcing the number for people to call if you want to be friends, fans, and family with do-it-yourself.
Let me ask you this before we go, Robin. Let me ask you this now. Friends, fans, and family. Now, where would partners fit into this?
The partners, well, first of all, what's a partner? What is a partner?
You know what? We better discuss that off the air. Yeah, let's discuss that off the air.
Okay.
So when we put it on air, we got it down airtight.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so we ain't got stealing our ideas.
Lurking, chin sport again.
Okay, yeah.
What did you say, Grandma?
I said Satan is lurking for a chance to spoil anything you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Let's discuss that off here. Okay, but what I'm going to do it is 12:30 where I'm at. I need like a 30-minute break, and then I'm going to call Robin. I'm going to call you, and then Delmar, if you're available, we'll patch you in too.
I'm available.
All right, 30 minutes. So, yeah, give me 30 minutes. I got to wind down and do a couple of things here. So 29 minutes, I'll be holy. So I'm gonna play two things. And I'm out. Where I'll see you guys in 28 minutes.
And now an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They want to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.